The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. It is great to be with you. While Dory is on vacation, I'll be here all week, along with Chris Martin. It's great to be back with you, Ursula. I've worked with you so
Thank
long.
Thank you. I know.
Always
Welcome
a pleasure
back.
Being back in the building, except for the horrible parking around here.
But it is tough.
Luckily,
it is
I
tough.
Just invade Dory's space, you know, which is nice. There.
Hey, I want to correct something that I just had in my newscast because I couldn't believe it when it came out of my mouth. But I had talked about the temperature being 75 degrees right now. I'm like, yeah, no, that's not right. And I just refreshed a few more times. Like, no, it's 64. Didn't want anyone to think, like, hello.
You know, I feel like it's hot and muggy outside. Am I the only one? I thought, you know, no wonder I was so hot. But all right.
We're not in the 70s yet.
It's all that Norwegian heritage. Yeah. I belong in a northern climate.
But so. Welcome.
Yes. Thank you so much. All right. It is time for the top story of the day. Time for the big lead.
The big lead. Top national.
Well, the biggest story of the day is the billionaire that's facing some pretty significant charges for a cache of underage photographs and relationships with girls that are too young for consent. William Sweeney, assistant director in charge of the New York office of the FBI, relates some of what Jeffrey Epstein is facing.
The girls were recruited in a variety of ways, usually by employees of Epstein and sometimes by fellow victims. The victims typically received hundreds of dollars in cash. The estimated dozens of victims were as young as 14 years old.
Now, if these charges sound familiar to you, it's because this guy was charged with similar things a long time ago, but he got a disgusting sweetheart deal to avoid a life sentence, or up to a life sentence. We'll get more into the sweetheart deal he got in a bit, but these charges are not from new events.
For at least a four-year period covering the entirety of 2002 through 2005, he is alleged to have sexually exploited and abused dozens of minor girls at his homes in New York City and in Palm Beach, Florida.
So again, 2002 to 2005, this individual is hanging around. And by the way, they describe a conspiracy, too. Because he's got multiple employees helping him recruit and retain and reemploy all of these young girls in this disgusting scheme. And the FBI is pulling no punches.
Children who provided Epstein massages while they were nude or partially nude. Children who were asked to engage in direct and indirect sex acts for money. Children who were enticed to do all these things at the hands of a man more than or nearly three times their age.
And in a triumph for good journalism, the FBI gives credit to a certain degree to the Miami Herald for their investigative reporting on the Epstein case. Casey Frank, Miami Herald senior editor.
They're different from the charges that he pleaded to in Florida in that those were very minor charges that carried with them a year in the county jail. These are charges that could put him in prison for the rest of his life.
Jeffrey Berman, United States Attorney for the Southern District of New York, says with the billions of dollars that this guy has at his disposal, he's a flight risk.
We think he has every incentive to try and flee the jurisdiction. And when you have two planes and you live much of the year abroad, you know, we think that's a very real risk.
Yeah, this guy's probably looking at Roman Polanski about now and thinking, you know, I need a quick vacation to Switzerland.
He has enormous wealth. The charges are very serious, and they carry with them a maximum sentence of 45 years in jail, which to someone of Epstein's age is basically a life sentence.
And it's, look, if the guy was 20 years old, I'd be in favor of life sentence for this kind of ridiculous criminality. If he gets convicted, he should serve it out. And look, I was trying to figure out what was it that, just hearing his name, I remembered this was the billionaire that got the sweetheart deal, that he got a light slap on the wrist last time around. It disgusted me. By the way, just listening to the various accusations against him, it sounds like the accusations against a certain pop star that are detailed quite extensively in a new HBO documentary, you know, about Neverland, if you catch my drift. But anyway, a lot of people are making excuses. And then this billionaire gets a lot of people making excuses for him. I went to the Wikipedia page to remind myself of what his previous conviction entailed. And while I should caution, Wikipedia isn't 100% accurate all the time. It does fairly well for these kinds of things. In June of 2008, after he pled guilty to a single state charge of soliciting prostitution from girls as young as 14, he was sentenced to 18 months in prison. Instead of being sent to state prison, like the majority of sex offenders convicted in Florida, he was housed in a private wing of the Palm Beach County Stockade. He was able to hire his own security detail and was allowed work release to his downtown office for up to 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. He served 13 months before being released for a year of probation. While on probation, he was allowed numerous trips on his corporate jet to his homes in Manhattan and the U.S. Virgin Islands. You know, what fresh hell is this? You know, what a tough prison sentence. And he gets to hire his own. Most people who hire their own prison security have to do it with cigarettes and other favors. There's clearly something going on, and it's disgusting, and I'm cheered to see the feds go after him for one more crack. And by the way, he's got ties to everybody from President Clinton to President Trump to Prince Andrew, who have been, and he's a billionaire, so these kinds of things happen. These kinds of associations are no shocker. By the way, he gave fairly prominently to a number of Democrats in office, and a number of them returned the donations the last time he was arrested. So what I'd like to look at is who's been hanging around this guy since he was convicted. You know what I mean? Because he's a registered sex offender. So I'd like to know, is there anybody on the prominent scale of things that maybe they probably don't see him here, but you know, maybe they're visiting him overseas or something. I'd be very curious to see if the Miami Herald ends up digging up anything additional on that. So that's the top story of the day. And by the way, as they go through his computer and everything else, it wouldn't surprise me if we get other top stories from the Epstein case as the prosecution goes on. And I hope they nail every single one of them and all of his employees that are arranging this stuff to abuse and exploit children. Totally disgusting.
Well, they also say there's a lot of famous names that he's tied with, as you mentioned, and that could come out in the case as well.
And that'll be another big lead. And that'll be big lead. Like if any of those prominent people, if he's got some kind of a picture trove or something, which, you know, wouldn't surprise me. He's a multi-billionaire. He wants political favors. Wouldn't surprise me if he was keeping, you know, something on the side for various people. Plus, he's got houses and stuff everywhere. So who knows what they could end up finding. And that would be a very big story. And that leaves us to
the big lead update.
California has been, there's been a whole lot of shaking going on in California, and it's got residents in California nervously thinking about the big one. NBC's Lester Holt has more.
Let's go! Let's go! Let's go!
For those living near the epicenter of the massive 7.1 magnitude earthquake, a seismic shift in more ways than one.
I don't know if any of us will ever feel safe here again.
Thousands of small aftershocks have hit Southern California since Friday's quake, which followed a 6.4 shock the day before. Some families have started sleeping outside as a precaution.
It's like just traumatizing for us to be inside.
The quake felt as far away as L.A., Vegas, Phoenix, even Sacramento.
This is a very strong earthquake.
Playing out on live TV.
We're experiencing very strong shaking. I think we need to get under the desk.
The tremors sparking fires, damaging structures, and leaving a visible fissure in the desert. Swimming pools shaking like stormy seas, giving a small glimpse at the energy vibrating from below. But thankfully, no lives were lost and no major injuries reported.
I don't like to talk about the earthquake.
Had a quake this size happened in a more populated area, officials say the loss of life could have been devastating.
On the long run, we're going to have a lot more earthquakes and we're going to have a lot stronger shaking.
You have to go over these huge, like, cracks and crevices in the road.
In the small town of Trona, around 50 homes sustained damage. These high desert communities had been struggling even before the quake.
This thing may put me out of business.
Now, some are looking to rebuild and hoping this won't prove to be a lasting setback.
Any time that we can, you know, go through a 7-point earthquake and we do not report a fatality, a major injury, do not suffer structural damage that was significant, I want to say that's a blessing and a miracle.
And here's the most fascinating part to me. It's California. They've got the San Andreas Fault. There's earthquakes there all the time. And yet the power of the quake still shakes people to their core. And they start thinking about, you know, sleeping outside, doing these things. It's not sustainable, of course. They're not going to sleep outside forever. Well, I mean, I guess some people in Seattle do. But the odds are you're not going to be doing that forever. You look at this and you watch how fast people forget. You know, I remember the Seattle quake. And I'll tell you, I was very nervous about earthquakes. But it hasn't really been top of mind for quite a while, you know. And so have I been checking all of the – have I been going through my checklist of to be prepared, what I need, what I've got on hand? No, I have not. But I'll tell you, the California experience reminds me. And it's interesting to see, you know, again, this earthquake happened in a fairly sparsely populated area. They're still scheduled or, quote-unquote, overdue for the big one. And if the big one hits, you're looking at a long time where you're going to be on your own, and it's going to be tough to have water. And in the heat of California or in the summer heat anywhere, you're going to need that water pretty quickly. So let the California lesson be something that just gives you that little nod that says, what do I have in the garage or what do I have in storage that would prepare me for any major natural disaster that hit here? And let's pretend that the transportation infrastructure was shut down. Heck, that can happen here on, you know, any commuting hour. But let's pretend it was shut down permanently for at least a month or two. What would you do? What would you be ready for? And prepare accordingly. I'm not saying go overboard. I'm not saying build a bunker or something. I'm saying have some water on hand. And if you don't do that, at the very least, you can go buy a little filter at any camping store. You know, you can go to Cabela's or REI or something and pick up a little filter, and it'll basically make it so that you can make any kind of water pure. You know, you'll be able to drink and use that filter to purify the water that's around, including, you know, from mud puddles or whatever you've got, and at least that would be something to rely on. And they're pretty cheap, by the way, so you can just store that somewhere in case of disaster, and you'd be ready to roll in the water department. All right, big lead.
The big lead, big local.
Saudi Airlines dropping a $6 billion, that's right, with a B, $6 billion order for 737 MAX planes as Boeing's crisis deepens. This is a sad piece of news in my book, and not surprising at all. In fact, you know, the continued hits toward Boeing are pretty predictable when you think about, you know, what they've faced of late with the 737 MAX plane facing two fatal crashes that killed 346 people. The Saudi airline Flya deal reversed its plans to buy 50 of the 737 MAX jets. They've canceled that $6 billion order, and that order is now going to Airbus. And so the European airplane maker is, of course, enthusiastic about the deal. Boeing had a classy response, basically wishing the Flya deal well, and focusing on returning their 737 MAX to safe service. So, you know, again, this is the kind of thing where at some point it's pretty predictable, but it's also frustrating. There's a Northwest pride here. There's jobs with Boeing, and then there's also just basic American pride, where you've got the great airline facing these kinds of struggles and the frustration of knowing that they were avoidable, which must be most acutely felt in the ranks of Boeing itself. And speaking of Northwest companies,
the big lead, top trending.
Starbucks is apologizing to the Tempe Police Department. This from CBS This Morning.
The Association for the Tempe, Arizona Police Department says on the 4th of July, six officers were enjoying their drinks at this Starbucks ahead of their holiday shift when a barista asked them to leave because a customer complained their presence made him feel unsafe. After the officers left, the association tweeted, several of those cops are veterans who fought for this country. Hashtag zero respect, alongside a dump Starbucks image. It's a message that quickly began trending online, along with the hashtag boycott Starbucks. Association President Rob Ferraro later went on Fox News and clarified his organization's stance.
We're not asking for a boycott of Starbucks, and we don't want the employee fired. Hopefully this is a learning opportunity and we can move forward.
Some people are also backing the customer who complained. On Twitter, one user wrote, I don't feel safe around the police ever. You need to work harder to earn our respect and trust. And another wrote that perhaps the customer felt unsafe because of a history of racial profiling and police brutality in Arizona.
Let me see your eyes!
In January, a Tempe police officer shot and killed a 14-year-old boy suspected in a burglary. Police say he was carrying an airsoft replica handgun. The shooting drew outrage in the community. The officer resigned, and the shooting is being investigated.
All right. So there's a number of things here. One, the attachment of the largely unrelated story at the end just kind of drives me crazy. You've got a young kid with a realistic looking handgun. It's not an actual handgun, but an airsoft. So does that give you pause as to why police might end up shooting and not waiting to find out if it's real before they get shot? You know, they'll have to look at the details. But again, this has nothing to do with somebody sitting in the middle of a well-lit Starbucks. And then for folks saying, gosh, you know, maybe the customer had this legit reason. Maybe they had a history. Well, maybe they did, but they can leave the Starbucks. It's not like the cops were doing anything wrong. It's not like all police, if, like, for the person who says, I never feel safe with the police, my bet is you would call them if there's an emergency. So there's that. I mean, that's a problem that you have, not a problem that all police have. So it doesn't make any sense to say, gosh, I had a bad experience, therefore I want no police around ever at the Starbucks. But also, this whole going after the entire company, like hashtag dump Starbucks, hashtag boycott Starbucks, don't you kind of wish that for social media we would pause and then, you know, kind of ask ourselves, well, where's this company really going? And does the company itself support banning police officers, or is this the action of one employee? I feel like we get so excited about the fact that we might be able to tweet something and get new retweets and have it go viral, and we're going to be so awesome. It's going to be great. That instead of trying to get to the bottom of something and trying to make an actual change, like calling up Starbucks and saying, did you realize this happened, and having them change, we just go for the virtual pitchforks and virtual torches instead. All right. That's The Big Lead from Dory Martin.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Local nanny administrators on social media sites were key in catching a child abuser. We have more from Cairo Radio's Carolyn Osorio. Carolyn, what's happening with
you? Well, you may or may not know this, but it's not easy to get childcare in King County. In fact, many have to get on lists before they're even pregnant to reserve a spot, which is why local social media sites like Seattle's Moms Group and Nanny Parent Connection help connect nannies with parents. But these sites do more than make the connection. They're actually, from what I've learned from this story, watchdogs in an effort to keep children safe. Now, the story starts last year. Nanny administrators got feedback from members that children under the care of a particular nanny seemed afraid of her. They also noticed an unexplained cut on a child's lip. And so Sean Whitcomb with the Seattle Police Department says those administrators acted on those tips.
But because of the concerns that had been shared by the nanny organization, they were wise enough to put up a nanny cam to keep an eye on this nanny. And nanny cams are called nanny cams because if you're leaving your child in the care of someone else, you can see that they're safe. And so the appropriately titled nanny cam caught this nanny acting in a way that she shouldn't.
So according to court documents, the camera captured the nanny striking a 22-month-old repeatedly for doing what little ones do, poop in their diapers. The nanny knocked the child to the hardwood floor and hit her head. She slapped the child across the face multiple times and yelled, "No pooping," After the diaper changed, the nanny then struck the child so hard it knocked her to her knees. Now, the nanny was convicted of assault, and part of her sentencing that was suspended was that she was put on probation, and the court ordered stated she could not work as a nanny or be around children other than her own. Okay. So, Colby Underwood.
By the way, let's pause there.
Yeah.
No children other than her own.
I know.
Do you
that's
know
a
if
tough
there's
one.
Been any investigation there? Because people who get mad at little kids who poo, or anybody for that matter, you know, if she's doing that to other kids who poo, what are the odds that she's not doing it to her own kids that when they're pooing? What's
and,
going
and,
on?
And
that?
That's an interesting question. When I talked to Sean Whitcomb, he didn't have an answer for that. What he did say was that, you know, she was, you know, they did catch it on video. She went through the process. Part of that was in the court order that said those things, that she couldn't be around other children other than her own.
Right.
And that
minimally, I just
yeah.
feel like the state at this point, somebody at the state level needs to be looking at the medical records and having a safety check on her kids. Because that's super creepy. Anyway, sorry
well,
for interrupting.
No, that's completely fine. And I think that, you know, that's a part of the overarching story, which we'll get to, is that we've got nanny administrators that are watching and trying to, you know, help keep children safe.
Yeah.
And so Colby Underwood is one of those. He is the COO of the Nanny Parent Connection. Now, that group has roughly 20,000 members, and it is the largest child care community in our state, connecting families with child care and for members to talk about, you know, what they hear.
Somebody said, oh, I heard about this nanny who had abused somebody's child recently, and here's her name, and, you know, does anybody know anything about her? Is she a member of the community?
And so they banned the nanny from their site, but went on high alert when they were contacted by the SPD.
And then we had heard, you know, she's out there trying to find parents to work for as a nanny in other communities. And that obviously got us very, very nervous and very concerned.
And so this is for the second time administrators from multiple parenting groups band together and warned parents.
Just let everybody know about, you know, what this woman had done and what she had been accused of and arrested for. And then we found out that she was starting to use different names. And that's when, you know, we started talking to Detective Kennedy on a very regular basis about, do you know what name she's using? You know, what can we do to help? You know, we're watching right now. We're looking for this person. I believe she used 4 or 5 different names. You know, people obviously found out about this individual, what had happened. She was removed from, I think, almost all of the communities from what I was told.
So because of these nanny administrators, they sent evidence that she was posting again looking for work under these aliases. And as a result, she was rearrested for violating parole and she was sent to jail for 90 days. Now, the story picked up steam again recently.
She had put up a post a couple of weeks ago saying that they got a new bouncy house and her son or her daughter needs a playmate and come on over and play in our bouncy house. And when we heard that, I mean, that's horrible.
So now Colby says they've reached out to SPD. And meantime, another administrator talked to Detective Kennedy as well with the Seattle Police Department and took it another step further, laying it all out there in a post that starts with, quote, I'm not that person. I don't make scenes in groups. I'm diplomatic and easygoing. I'm an admin in a nanny group. I don't fuel fires. I put them out. However, I cannot turn my back on this. I'm making an exception for the kids, and proceeds to post the history with the nanny, including court documents, aliases, and the latest posting with the bouncy house request for playdates. Now, that post was shared widely until the admin took it down after being threatened by the nanny with a lawsuit. And so, you know, that post has been taken down. But, you know, Colby, he brings up this.
Who knows that she didn't abuse any other children after she got out? You know, how is our society stopping this person? And that's definitely what haunts me right now.
And Sean Whitcomb with the SPD says, you know, he's really impressed with this local nanny community.
What this story, you know, really tells us is that when community members share information, share suspicions, communicate with each other, and communicate with us, we can all have a safer community.
Well, it's solid work on their part. I hope that a news organization, maybe even ours, posts all the material from this guy's post that he was threatened with, because a lot of times that, I mean, truth is your defense. If somebody is threatening you, it's not libel if it's true.
Well, and this was a different nanny administrator, not the Colby, but it was a different one. And that's what her point was that if it's true, you can't be held liable. But there was the concern of harassment. Is it harassment?
Right. And you could always, a lot of people, especially if you already need child care, they don't have disposable income to fight harassment suits. So
exactly.
It's easier to take it down than not. But that wouldn't preclude a news organization from posting the same material up and saying, this is the material that this person objected to. Here's the court documents that show what this person was up to. And then, you know, they could send a letter to that place, but, you know, there's lawyers on file for such a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the real takeaway is, and part of the nannies, they have some good tips for, because I was like, I'm a parent, like, how can you avoid this? I've actually used sites and got an amazing nanny. And yeah. So, you know, it's so hard. But what they've said is that the recommendations are that you want to, you know, do a criminal background check, you know, never cut corners with it. And, you know, we're all busy and, you know, you meet that person and you're like, hey, they seem really great. And they say don't ever not do that. And that, you know, reach out to the community at large, because, you know, this is like 20,000 members strong, the Nanny Parent Connection. And, you know, you could literally have responses, you know, 5,000 people are like actively, you know, working there. And so that's a really great way for both parents and nannies to like ask, hey, what do you think of these parents? Or, hey, what do you think of these nannies? You know, and then the third thing was to the nanny cam.
Yeah.
You know, if it weren't for these nannies reaching out to the parents saying, hey, we kind of are worried about this nanny, literally the next day that they put that nanny cam in, and she'd babysat for them, you know, like 15 other times. I think that's what the police report says. It was on the nanny cam the next day.
Can you imagine being a parent and wondering, you know, why is my child afraid here? That's just silly. You know, just kid being kid. And then, you know, you find out within 12 hours of your first nanny cam that this person has been striking your child. And
it breaks your heart. I mean, to read the police, the court documents, you know, it's a hard read. And, you know, what one nanny that I talked to who actually posted the documents, she made a really great point. You know, kids sometimes, you know, get scared of nannies just because of the anxiety of their parent being away. So
right.
It's not always an indication. And probably in most cases, it's not an indication. It's just like, you know, the parent, you know, anxiety.
Sure.
But, you know, It's just a hard case. But what's so cool about this and why I love this story is these nannies that banded together and were like, hey, you know, we're going to look out for one another, which is not a small thing.
It's just awesome work. It's like an online super nanny club.
That's right.
Superheroes for moms and dads out there that need childcare. Great job. Great community effort. Amazing work on your part too, Carolyn. Good report. Fascinating story. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Seattle Times asked readers what the city of Seattle's flag should look like. And it's funny because I remember seeing the story originally and then seeing what the Seattle flag was. I didn't know the city had a flag, frankly. I'd totally forgotten. And then I saw the City of Goodwill. It was a flag that was created by a friend of a city council member during the Goodwill Games back in 1990. And for those of you who've been around long enough, you probably remember the Goodwill Games. That was the Ted Turner. We're going to have kind of an alternative to the Olympics. I never quite understood the rationale for it, other than maybe he thought it would help, you know, broadcast sports revenue for one of his cable channels or something. But the rationale was supposed to be something about, you know, peace, love, and progress for mankind, and it never quite worked. But anyway, it much like the flag for the city of Seattle, that never quite worked either. We have, you know, the City of Goodwill. It's got the seal of the city in the middle, and then a bunch of squiggly lines around it. It looks like perhaps a diagram from your sex ed class in high school or something. It's just a weird-looking flag. Doesn't really work. I mean, Chris, you're, as a non-biased person, you know, just aside, you'd agree that this flag does not work, right?
Our current one?
City, yeah.
Have you ever, I've never seen that anywhere.
Never seen it fly anywhere.
Everywhere. No. At a sporting event, nothing.
Nor do I want to.
No, it's pretty weak.
Yeah, it's boring. When you look at it, it would be like, I don't know. I guess another way to describe it might be if, say, James Bond had no production values, you know?
It looks exactly like the Starbucks logo, too, actually.
Yeah, Starbucks might have ripped it off a little bit in the early days, but Starbucks had the cooler kind of weird mermaid thing going, you know, but this was just, just wrong.
What would you put on the on a Seattle flag?
Well, I would be described as one of the snarky people that they have in here, or the sarcastic people that said perhaps the needles and tarps and tents and other things belong on the flag now. Because the mayor of the city says something at the end of the article, and they have all these different submissions. They have different people who've submitted flags. Some of them are actually halfway decent, you know, as far as if you have to have a flag for the city, you know, some of them are better than others. But the mayor, Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin, has indicated she'd be open to a redesign of the flag, saying through a spokesperson that, quote, the most beautiful city in America should have the most beautiful, well-designed city flag in America. I thought, well, that's fine. It's just that I don't think Seattle's the most beautiful city in America anymore. I think it used to be the most beautiful city in America, and I think it could be the most beautiful city in America again. But it's not there right now. So if you've seen these flags or if you have opinions on this or any of the stories that we're covering today or have covered today, you can always text us on the Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. Just text us on the Online Trading Academy text line. Text us at 98973. So I would be one of the snarky people that would put the tarps and stuff on there, but I would want the flag to be the temporary flag of Seattle because I don't want to condemn Seattle permanently. That said, there's a number of very simplified designs that actually would be more recognizable, I think. But all of that said, I look at it and I think, why? You know what I mean? Like, if the city did have the most beautiful flag in the world, or for all cities, I don't know that anybody flies city flags, or at least I cannot cite a single city flag. Of all the cities I visited, I can't. Tell me what the New York city flag looks like or the Los Angeles city flag.
I have no idea. I have no idea what state flags look like, actually.
Well,
I'm not a big flag guy.
Chris is just indicting his wherever he went to school right now. just no ability whatsoever. You're not going to be my trivia partner at any bar trivia.
No, I didn't have
music category.
I didn't have the most solid education.
All right, so. But for those of you who do know what flags are flying out there, you would not recognize probably any other city flag. Now, speaking of well-educated individuals, we'll tell you about a couple of Renton students that are working on a mission to Mars. So we'll have that later on in the program. Plus, Shama Sawant getting more praise, deservedly so. Shocking. David Bowes in for Dory Monson.